Howdy folks, this is Shane. Welcome to the In the Blues Tone podcast. It's September 23rd, 2017. So man, the year is basically almost over already. That's insane. The year's been great. I wanted to firstly thank everybody for subscribing to the In the Blues channel. We have a whole lot of new people on board and man, it is up to 70,000 people. That's insane. That's enough to fill a stadium. So that is crazy. I still kind of can't believe the reach I have online. It's just been fantastic. So thank you so much for all the support over the years and to everyone who's just jumped on board. The podcast is my favorite thing to do on YouTube right now because I always get other people's point of view and comments and all that kind of stuff. And I think that's, you know, a kind of valuable thing for everybody. Sometimes I don't know all the information. Someone will post something and then I'll pin it to the top. And people can comment from there. So it's great. It's really cool. So I enjoy doing the podcast. You can also find it on iTunes or you can go to inthebluespodcast.com and you can listen to the whole thing for free there as well. So the first thing I wanted to have a chat about is PV and PV amplifiers, all that kind of stuff. Now, it's strange and a little bit weird. Today I went into a shop. I was looking for a smaller amp to take to this venue that where the stage that we play on is really, really small. All of my other amps are too big. I was looking for something small. So unfortunately, it was either a Blues Junior, I don't say unfortunately, meaning there's not a whole lot in this particular size that I want, like physical size, not watts, but physical size. Or it was a Classic 30. And I'd played a few Blues Juniors and I've played so many lately that I've rattled or done something funny. So I thought, you know what, I'm gonna go play some Classic 30s. It's been a long time since I played one. And as I got to the shop, I said, oh, I wanna play one of these. So back in the day, Classic 30s, their power cable was hardwired in. You couldn't just unplug it. Now you can actually unplug it. And I thought, oh, these new ones are a bit different. And I had a look at the back, and it said made in China. Now, I'm not going to flame PV for going over to China and making stuff over there. They've made plenty of great amps in China. One of my favorite PV bandits of all times made in China, the Red Stripe one, as you probably know if you watch my channel and all that kind of stuff. So I love it. The thing is, these new ones are the same price as the USA-made PV Classics, give or take. Now, they might vary maybe $50, but they're essentially the same price, which is kind of odd for a Chinese-made amp. I gotta say, though, the quality of them still looks exceptional. If I hadn't have looked at the back, I probably wouldn't have noticed any difference. One of the main differences with the amplifier is the speaker that's in the back of the new Classic amps. Now, they've changed them. They sound a little less mid-heavy, so they're a little bit more Fender-y sounding. I don't want to say they sound like a Blues Junior, but there's not a whole lot in it other than the fact that it's got two channels and more clean headroom and all that kind of stuff. So, essentially, they sound more Fender-y than I've ever heard a PV before, and I think it might just come down to that speaker. The shop I was in today, one of the guys in there said he was lucky enough to A/B both the American one and the Chinese one. I didn't get the luxury of that. Unfortunately, there was only the Chinese one in there. And they both sounded quite different to each other, especially in the mids. And that was my first impression. As soon as I plugged in, I went, wow, it actually sounds really good. But it sounds a whole lot different to what I remember. And I've owned two or three Delta Blues amps in the past. I know they've got a different speaker config and all that. But I know the voicing really well. And it sounded different to me. So that was interesting to see. The PV are now doing the Delta Blues amps in 210 again, which is a configuration that wasn't available for quite some time. And the Classic amps are now being made in China. Interesting stuff. If you see them in shops and they've got a power cable that you can disconnect from the back, then they're obviously made in China. I always find buying the first generation anything made in somewhere else is always one of those risks that you do take. Of course, they do come with warranty, of course, but I'm always reluctant to buy first generation anything made in China unless it's stood the test of time and it works. Chinese stuff's getting better and better, and like I said, the PV Bandit and many other amps out there have been made exceptionally well. Look at the older versions of the Fender Mustangs, they're built extremely well as well. It would be great to see if this new generation of PV Classics and PV Delta Blues stand the test of time and are built as well or better than the ones in the US. I have a hard time believing they'll be better. It looks like they might have taken a financial shortcut maybe on the speaker. The magnet doesn't look as good. Just has less of that swampy vibe than maybe the old amps did. But if you like the Fender tones, then you're definitely going to love this PV Classic, which is kind of odd that it sounds so Fender-y. I urge you to go check it out, plug straight into it, and tell me that clean channel doesn't sound like a Fender amp. It sounds really cool though, but it doesn't sound like the old Classics to me. One of the other amps that they had in the shop was a PV Classic 20 head, which are actually pretty cool. And these have a power attenuator on the back. You can switch it down from 20 to 5 to 1 watt. They're about $100 cheaper than buying the Classic 30 combo. I don't know, man. It feels like price to what you're buying, it should be a little bit less. But that said, it's a cool option if you're looking for an amp with a power attenuator. Those, as is with all the other PV amps that I can see looking at the web, are all now made in China. Let me know your thoughts on PV doing this. I was a little bit maybe out of the loop on the news with PV. I had no idea they were actually basically stopping production in the US and moving all their amp manufacturing to China. It could be that they're moving everything to China as well. Looking at the forums, I'm getting mixed messages on what's actually going on. Someone says that they want to try and remain open to some extent, but it looks like someone might be buying them out. I have no idea if that's factual or not, so you can Google that as well. Please leave all your comments below and let me know what you think of this, if it's a good or bad move for PV, if you'd be more or less reluctant now to go buy one of their Classic Series or PV Delta Blues amps. I don't know, I'd like to see how they go for a little while before I make the move to buy one. The Classic 30 ticks the box in terms of physical size and volume and sort of tone that I kind of like. But it's at that same price that the old one that was made in the US is, so I'm kind of like on the fence about that at the moment. I just probably need to wait till I have a sale, and then I'll be able to justify it that little bit more. Let me know your thoughts. All right, so this next topic might be a little bit controversial, and there's no right or wrong opinion on this. If you don't agree with me, that's fine. Just leave a comment below. And if you do agree with me, you can also leave a comment below as well. Whatever. So this is just speaking from the heart, from my experience lately, where my head's been the last few months. So I'm gonna go back to when I saw Chris Kane play live. Now he was playing a Les Paul into a Fender amp and he had no effects pedals. And he absolutely rocked. It was so good. And that inspired me to kind of start being more selective with my gear and relying less on what I'm stomping on. So I got rid of my delay. I got rid of a few things, I kept an overdrive, and then depending on what amp I would take out, I wouldn't bring any pedals, just to make sure my playing was at its best. And my focus was on my playing rather than where my feet were and what was on the ground. This is one thing I've spoken about this before, I felt like I had option paralysis for a while in terms of pedals, and I felt like it was pulling my playing backwards. I know when I'm playing at my best, which is only as good as it ever is, but I know when I'm at my best when I can make a PV Bandit on the drive channel sound great. Something also clicked while I was in San Francisco recently. I had a chance to play over there and I borrowed some gear. I borrowed an $85 Fender Deluxe Plus 112 amp, which I've done a demo of. I'll put a link up in the cards for that. And the guitar that was in that video was about $100 maximum. Like if it was $100, I'd be surprised. It was an Epiphone Special 2. And it had two humbucker pickups. It was basically the cheapest Epiphone you could buy. And I managed to pull my tone out of it. I did have one of my overdrive pedals. And then I realized, you know what? I don't even need my overdrive pedal because this actual amplifier sounds good on the dirt channel. So it got me wondering about the whole law of diminishing returns. So that means the more you spend, the increment of better tone only goes up fractionally or maybe not at all. I'm almost convinced now, for me to get my sound, if the guitar's playable and it feels good to play and it sounds good, it can be an Epiphone, it can be a Tokai, it doesn't have to be, you know, a Gibson Custom Shop. And if even if I've owned a Gibson Custom Shop, I'm using that as an example, my tone and playing doesn't sound any better on a Gibson Custom Shop guitar than it did on the Epiphone Special, which was under $100. I think they're around $89, something like that. So they're pretty cheap. I was sort of like stunned. I got home and I'm like, man, I got all this nice stuff. Like, and I've just come back from playing really cheap stuff that shocked me not only how good that was, but how I was still able to dial in my own tone. And I almost feel like gear is almost irrelevant. You got to get it to a point where either it can perform live or you can dial your tone in. The only person that's going to notice your tone is different, either other guitar players or yourself, and no one else is gonna care. I pulled some of the best tone I've ever had playing this really, really sub $200 rig. Like it was fantastic. And the fact that you can just dial it in using your ear and, you know, compensating for the pickups and all that kind of stuff in terms of where your EQ might sit on the amp, it's liberating to be able to play like that and just dial in a sound. One thing that keeps your tone consistent is a good pedal on a clean channel, and that's kind of how I like to roll. I took my overdrive with me and it was a piece of cake for me to dial in that tone. Like I said, the amp overdrive sounded pretty wild as well, but now I know I can get my sound out of almost anything. I don't really feel like I'd need to go spending big bucks again on any expensive or boutique stuff, and that's just my personal opinion. I really don't feel like spending $3,000 or $4,000 on an amplifier is gonna make me sound any better than even that $200 rig did. I really don't think it's gonna make that much difference. It comes down to how well I'm playing. And if it feels, like I said, if the guitar feels good to play, the action setup, this guitar played beautifully. It played as good as any of my other Gibsons or Tokai guitars I've ever played, and it was dirt cheap. I don't know if that particular guitar was like an anomaly or what, but I posted some live clips of me playing it, and I was just stunned how great it was to play. It felt awesome. So for me personally, whether I'm playing my PV Bandit on the dirty channel, a PV Bandit on the clean channel with my pedal, my Fender Blues Deluxe, or any other amp that I might borrow at a jam night or something like that, my sound will come through irrespective now. And I'm not boasting, I'm just saying, like, I know my tone, and I know, and it feels like there's not a whole lot of difference between any of these rigs other than how much things are worth and how cool they might look. So it's just a little bit of food for thought. I really feel like for me, the law of diminishing returns kicks in at somewhere around $500 to $800 Australian, say $500 US if you can buy a good used amp for that price. Between that and say a $4,000 or $3,000 or $4,000 amp, there's not gonna be that much tonal difference between them to get the particular sound that you want. Sure, if you're buying an amp with a different speaker configuration, that's going to make a huge difference. But if you're just trying to get your sound out of one amp with a 12-inch speaker and another amp with a 12-inch speaker, and you know your sound, you should be able to get a pretty wild sound out of it, irrespective of what it is. And just remember, I'm not talking about junk guitars that are like $40 or those Aldi amplifiers that might cost, I don't know, $40 as well. I'm not talking about that stuff. I'm talking about once you get to a point, say a Hot Rod Deluxe versus a Two Rock, or a Hot Rod Deluxe versus, you know, something that's even more expensive. So that kind of ballpark. I know in Australia there are a lot more, but I'm using that as an example because I really don't feel like there's that much tonal difference between them. And then the sound you'll dial in is the sound you have in your head, if you have a sound in your head, and then it's usually pretty much the same. I'd give it about 5% between my good rig that I've got at home and the rig that I played in San Francisco. There wasn't a whole lot of difference in it apart from about, I don't know, 80% increase in price. This next topic kind of follows on from the last topic in a way. So we're gonna talk about gear overload, especially on YouTube and just in the world in general, how much stuff is actually out there versus how much stuff you actually need. I think it's starting to get pretty crazy. I said this a while ago when I said no more demos on a video because I just felt like there's too much gear overload. And I still feel that way. I feel like it may have actually gotten worse. I'm gonna try and save you as much money as I can right now at the detriment of companies wanting to work with me and all that kind of stuff. I really just don't care. So one thing that I should point out is if you've got a Tube Screamer, a bog standard Tube Screamer or a Blues Driver and you like it, keep it. Let me put it to you like this. Out of all of the pedals I've demoed over the years, might be 500, might be 800, I'm not exactly sure, but it's a lot. There's not a whole lot of difference between a Tube Screamer and anything else. And that anything else could be insert brand here. I don't really care what it is. It can be a hand-painted box from some, you know, prestigious country somewhere or whatever. It doesn't really matter. The tones aren't going to be that dissimilar live. I'm going to tell you why, and this kind of piggybacks, like I said, off the last topic, which I'll put up in the cards if you haven't already seen that. So basically, what I'm trying to say is this. You're going to dial in your sound, whether or not you've got a Tube Screamer, a Blues Driver, a King of Tone, a Klon, or whatever. Now, inherently, there are some differences in the tone between a Klon and a Tube Screamer. There's no doubt about it. Some of these pedals do vary and do different things in your chain. What I'm trying to say is don't get too suckered into buying something if you already like what you've got. You should be able to get a good sound or just as good sound out of a Tube Screamer as you would out of some of these other pedals. One thing I've noticed a lot on YouTube is people say, man, a lot of these pedals sound the same. And I'm gonna tell you why they sound the same. Is because people like us who demo gear have usually a particular type of sound in our head which we can dial in. And I think that's the key. If you know the sound you like, you should be able to dial it in, and you will be able to dial it in no matter what pedal you're going to use. There are some nasty pedals out there as well, but if you get something, or if you watch a video and you go, man, that sounds great, and you already own a Tube Screamer, odds are you could probably kind of approximate the sound with the Tube Screamer, because a lot of these other pedals are kind of similar. There's some that have less mids and more mids and upper mids and bass controls and treble controls and all that kind of stuff. There's no doubt about it. Some sound better on than others, especially in the context of just playing at home, right? If you're just playing at home, you're gonna notice more difference between pedals than anywhere. If you start playing live, or you already play live and you've got a Tube Screamer and then you wanna get all these other type of boutique pedals, this isn't advocating a Tube Screamer. I'm using that as an example, by the way, but they're all gonna sound the way that you dial them in to get your particular sound. So if you've been using a Tube Screamer for a long time and you love that sound, then you go buy a boutique pedal. It does kind of the same thing. It's an overdrive pedal. Odds are you're gonna set it up pretty similar and you'll get a very similar tone. And in the live mix, you might like it less, you might like it more, it might not sound any different. So just keep that in mind. I'm a huge, huge advocate for not going out and blowing a whole lot of money on pedals that essentially do the same thing. So my advice is, if you want to use one as a rhythm pedal, that's cool. Use another one as a boost. You can daisy chain them that way if you choose to, and that's going to be fine. My point is this: if you plan on buying a second, third, or fourth overdrive pedal, try and find one that does something different, or at least stacks well into one you already like. Don't keep replacing your main pedal. So that's where the Klon works extremely well. It stacks great into just about anything you push it into because of its frequency. It's a very different type of sound. It sounds crap on its own, in my opinion. And I've owned Klons. I've owned a couple of Klons over the years, and I always feel like they're best either pushing an amp that's already dirty or going into another pedal. So you gotta find the right one that will work with your sound to give you what you want. You can save yourself a whole lot of time and money and focus on playing as opposed to focusing on your pedals. The pedals aren't gonna make you sound that much better. You might think they're gonna give you more of this or that, but generally they won't. Like I said, I've been stuck in the trap of using too much stuff, and now I'm back to using almost nothing as the best sound I've ever had. Please let me know your thoughts on this in the comments below. I know on YouTube, the gear thing is kind of like a bit of a black hole when it comes to stuff. There's just so much information, and once you go down into that tunnel, man, there's just too much stuff to keep track of, and almost too many options. Let's say a child is born every second, you know, one, two. That's how I feel how many pedal companies are popping up. They're popping up just as often as kids. It's insane. All right, so this next section of the podcast, I want to talk a little bit about the YouTube channel, where it is right now, where I hope to take it, and things that are going to change, or things that have already changed, and you might not have noticed it, I'm not too sure, but we'll fill you in right now on what's going on. So basically, here we go. So in terms of the pedal demos, I really feel like they're sort of hindering the channel's performance to some extent. There's a whole lot of stuff that goes on with the YouTube algorithm, and I feel like the pedal demos are really pushing me backwards. So I'm cutting them back a lot. I'm still getting them in, but I'm only going to be uploading one a week tops, and that's it. I don't really want to do any more. I feel like I'm a little bit burnt out with doing pedal demos, even some of the more boutique stuff, which is actually really good. It just, after a while, you know, after thousands, or not thousands, after hundreds of demos on pedals, I feel like I want to try sort of focusing on other stuff with my channel. So that's what I'm going to be doing. The Guitar Search Saturdays will go up every other week, something like that. We're going to do a summit at least, or try to do one at least once a month. I'm going to be doing the community hangouts as well. Amp demos is something that I really want to do. I've got loads of left-handed guitar demos going up from Jerry, so even if you're not a lefty, check out some of those videos. The guitars are just something else. They're really, really cool. Now, I spoke to Ryan recently as well. We're going to do some new stuff as well with him. So those videos will go up on Monday. The schedule is not really in place other than Guitar Search Saturday and also with Ryan. Those videos will generally go up on a Monday. The podcast, which you're watching right now, will go up. I'll still chop it up into segments, but I do plan on uploading the whole thing. So if you don't like watching it in segments, you can watch the whole thing on YouTube. I was supposed to do that for the last podcast, but I didn't get a chance to do it. So this will be the first one that will go up in its entirety, probably after the sections go up. I don't know. I figure that might be the best way of doing it. I've actually taken a lot of things on board from what people want me to do. And I have a lot of different tutorial videos coming up as well. And these aren't like how to play a lick like this. These are things that I've seen people ask me and I go, that'd make a great idea. So I've just started typing out ideas for stuff and I plan on getting stuck into these pretty soon. In a couple of days, I'm going to start tracking a brand new album from scratch with a friend of mine, Drew. So I'm going to take the video cameras over to his place and we'll film basically the process behind what's going on. And I'll capture different sections along the way and I'll compile it as we go. It might mean it's one big video at the end, or it might just be that I put it up in sections and show people how it works. I think recording in any capacity is an important thing if you play guitar or any instrument, to be honest. It's kind of like your legacy, you know, once you're gone, the music stays on and lives on and people can enjoy it. And, you know, you've got something to look back on, even if you're playing, you know, cover band stuff, at least you've got something that you've done. I think that's kind of important. I also want to do more honest and unbiased reviews on gear as well. I'm in talks right now with a couple of companies to see if we want to work together and all of that kind of stuff. So I'll have gear provided to the channel where I can just say whatever I want and get it back to them. However it's going to work, we'll work that out coming up as well. I think it's a cool thing. I don't want to get too cozy with any of the big companies, but if I can work with stores and remain independent and do my thing, then that's awesome. So I have a list of things that I want to demo. And if I can't get my hands on them through shops, I'll buy them and I'll work out how to get rid of them after I do the reviews. Because I think these are things that I see come up time and time again. People ask me hundreds of times, what do I think of these products? So they're the things that I'm going to try and get my hands on. So that's a little bit of a heads up on what's going on. You'll probably see a drop in the pedals getting released on my channel. It's only because I really don't think it's pushing my channel forward. And I'm not getting as much enjoyment out of doing them either. I started recommending some other channels for certain companies as well. And you'll probably see some of the guys that I might have worked with, their pedals turning up on other channels. And that's cool for them too. So yeah, there's so many pedal companies out there that it's like gear overload, and I'll be talking about that in a sec. So for those who don't know, I've spent a bit of time in the US over the years, probably about 2 years all up, maybe somewhere around there. And I've been to the States about 11 or 12 times since I was a teenager, actually. When I was 19, I was over there back in 1999. So, wow, I'm getting old. But anyway, I've been over there a lot. I've seen a lot of the jam nights in the US, also hosted and been a part of a lot of jam nights here in Australia. So I thought I would basically go over my observations and differences between them both. The first thing I want to talk about is song selection and just the feels of what we play here versus the States. I'm not saying one's better than the other, but I'm going to break this down. So in Australia, one thing I notice is no one takes any risks. There's only the more accomplished musicians who will go to a jam and they might sing one song over it like a slow blues and then they'll sing it over a funk the next time, which is cool. It keeps things interesting. So while the lyrics and all that kind of stuff may change to some extent, a lot of the songs are the same and people just put their own feel to it. And that's for the more experienced musos. A lot of them don't play anything differently every single week. It's the same song, structured the same way, with the same feel, with the same words. You can almost pick 3 out of the 6 songs that some of these guys are going to do, and it drives you nuts. And a lot of these songs are very, what's the word? Simple. I'll just keep it nice. So very, very simple and very, very boring. So you very rarely hear people play songs that are outside of the 12 bar. I'm a blues guy. I like blues, but I hate going to blues jams. They drive me nuts. One thing I love about the blues jams in San Francisco, the one at Swig is my favorite. My friend Ed hosts that. I've been going there for years, since 2006, somewhere around there. It was seven. It was somewhere around there. It was my first time going there. And I love it. They play just great songs, which probably would get boring for the people that are there, but at least coming as an outsider, the songs are a whole lot more interesting to listen to. I'll give you some examples. A lot of the blues stuff you'll hear in Australia, Rock Me Baby, Stormy Monday, Slit My Wrists or Throat, you know, like I call that suicide blues. After a while, you just don't want to hear it. You hear it to death, and that I think that's the problem. In the States, you'll hear Sitting on the Dock of the Bay. You'll hear I Wish, the Stevie Wonder song. I was like blown away when people started playing this. I'm like, is he serious? You'll see a lot of guys that think they can play bass start noodling on that here. And then they'll stop because they can't play it or no one else knows it. So to hear a blues jam with these sort of soul and R&B songs and funk songs thrown in, it was awesome. So Let's just talk about musicality as well, because this isn't something that's that dissimilar. I think people musically in Australia, at least in terms of their guitar playing ability, are just as good as the Americans. There's no doubt about it. I think they're very similar. There's a different flavor and feel on the most part, but you get an accomplished player here, accomplished player there. You know, they're both exceptional players. And it could be that with any instrument. But one thing I find in Australia is, and there are exceptions of this too. If you're talking about gigging musicians, it's a different thing, Bill. We're talking about jam nights. So the guys are at the jams in the United States, they know how to play the different shuffles. Every shuffle you hear, on the most part in Australia, feels the same. It's the same feel. Might be slightly faster, might be slightly slower. A lot of the accents are missed in the groove, I should say. So there's these things that you'll do right before the vocals come in the States, and they go crack and they bring it right back down. You don't get any of that here. It's just, you know, robot approach to play and shuffle. And like I said, there's a few guys that I know. My friend Drew, I don't put you in this. If you're watching this, you're like the freak of the shuffle. But I'm talking more generalized in terms of the musos that I see at the jams. The bass lines as well aren't right a lot of the time here. Just a lot of clunkers that might have been ex-guitar players. Whereas in the States, there's really great bass players that seem to know a lot of songs. You can't get away with just playing blues at a jam. It'll drive it into the ground. And I think where the guys in the States have got this right, and I'm sure there's plenty of horrible blues jams over there, but the ones I've been to, song selection is key. People are dancing, people are having fun, and it doesn't feel like the same thing night after night. There's this thing that I've noticed with a lot of the guys in the States where they'll just try a song, they'll have an iPad or their book, and they go, hey, I want to try this, and they'll go for it, and it'll sound great. But guys with horns will come up, start playing trumpet and all that kind of stuff. I'm like, man, this is awesome. You know, we don't get that back here. We don't really have anyone that comes to the jam. There might be a saxophone player here and there, but you don't never get like a horn section working together. You just don't really get that type of sound at any of the jams. They're very guitar-centric jams, which is fun if you're a guitar player like I am. But, you know, it gets tiring for people who are in the audience. No one needs to hear 185 bars of guitar solo in a song that they've heard, you know, 1,000 times. It gets old. So, and then this is the one criticism I have of Australia. I know I'm getting a sort of mixed around here, but just please, for the love of God, learn how to play some dynamics at a jam night. Not everything needs to be at 1,000 decibels all night. Not every guitar solo has to be at the maximum volume all the time. Use some dynamics. And that's one thing that I think I've noticed, especially at Swig in San Francisco. Dynamically, that jam is more appealing as well. You can be there, you can be dancing. Oh, I don't dance, but people are dancing, having a good time. They can sit down and enjoy it as well. And they don't have to scream over each other because they're a little bit more conscious of how loud everything is. There's this like battle of the guitar player thing that I notice, especially in Melbourne here, where everyone's trying to outdo each other with their volume or with their chops. In the States, it feels like people are a bit more fluid and connected musically. There's not this disjointedness that I hear. And a lot of the guys go to jams here. I'm not talking about some of these guys like Brian and the other guys you've seen on my channel. These are the jam regulars. You know, they don't know how to play well with others. And it's something that really bothers me. I feel like in the States, if you don't know the part or the song, you'll tend to play less instead of trying to play more and louder than the other guy. These are just things that I've noticed. I feel like there's more of a cohesion of music and maybe ability in the States. They take more risks when they play live and they play better songs. In Australia, at least at the jams that I go to, maybe I need to expand my circle again, but I find like the same people are doing the same songs every week with the same feel gets old. I'm guilty of singing a lot of the same songs, but at least I try to put it to a different feel now and then, or dig up some original songs or just something a little bit easy that people can follow and jam along to that's a little bit different as well. It really gets old hearing the same songs every single week by the same people and not seeing some of them improve either. I know this may sound kind of critical, but it's just the truth. I've seen guys who have been playing for 15 years who haven't gotten any better and they don't understand how to play well with others. I'm sure they're not even listening to the drummer, which is kind of like the foundation of how you play as a guitar player. So, you know, working off the drums as opposed to just chugging over it and over everything. This is something I don't understand. So Now, I'm sure this has sounded really heavily critical of Australia. I'm sure there's plenty of bad blues jams in the US as well. But let me know your thoughts. Let me know where you are and if you frequent jams and if you see some of this stuff that's played time and time again without any change of feel, dynamic, all that kind of stuff. I'd be really interested to know what you think of jam nights in your area. So let me know where you're from in the comments. Let me know what you think of the jam nights. Feel free to post links if you've got links to videos or whatever. I'm really looking forward to reading the comments, so please let me know your thoughts. Thanks for watching. My name's Shane. If you have any comments, questions, or suggestions about this podcast, or if you want me to talk about something in particular, please let me know. You can contact me at intheblues@outlook.com, on Facebook at facebook.com/intheblues, or you can leave a comment on any of the videos on YouTube, and I do read all the comments. I don't often get a chance to reply, but if you see that I've marked it as love, it means I've read it. So I'm going to start doing that more often as well. So thanks again, and I'll catch you soon. See ya.